all of you.
Good morning.
I'm rather glad that the bio is not here because I'm just simply the presence of God speaking to the presence of God. You are the presence of God. And so my greeting is that the presence of God in me, through me, as me, greets, loves, and honors, acknowledges the presence of God in you, through you, as you. Which sort of reminds me of Jesus. Jesus had a sort of what I used to call, of course now I will examine that more thoroughly, etymologically, but Jesus had about him what I used to call, when I came to understand it, a divine arrogance of self-assurance. As you might recall in the 10th chapter of John, the scribes and the Pharisees of his time wanted to stone him. And he asked, "For what I've done many good works among you since I've been here. Of which of the good works do you want to stone me?" And they said, "We don't want to stone you because of any good works, but because you, being a man, wants to make yourself one with God." Of course, prior to that, Jesus had said that I and my Father are one, which means that Jesus had an absolute assurance of who he is in his relationship with God, which demonstrates for me, and I suggest for all of us, what Jesus did was very perfectly demonstrated his relationship with God and God's relationship with us. But over the years, somehow, the church, society, politics, religion, and all the things with which we have allowed to control and direct our thoughts and emotions have caused us to think otherwise. So the process of getting back to that place of absolute assurance of who we are in God and who God is in us is what this picture is about that my wife is going to talk to you about. Because we must come to that place as scripture. You're probably familiar with 1 John, the second chapter and the 27th verse, which says simply that we are to come to that place. We are to be in that place. We are to strive and attain that disposition of thought where we don't need anyone to tell us or to teach us anything. And if perchance they do, they'll just be confirming what we already know, what we've already been told, and that is that I and my Father are one. Because in the very first chapter of Genesis, which, by the way, is the blueprint of our creativity, says that we are made in the image after the likeness of God. And the blueprint in the first chapter of Genesis spells out the ability, the same ability as Jesus said he did, we can do. And the work that he did, he did not do of himself. It is the Father that doeth through him. That is, that we too can exercise that dominion consciously, deliberately, intentionally, and attentively that God gave us. We can do that. When we were given the Bible, as you know, is an allegorical book. It bespeaks of the attributes and the characteristics that we ourselves are endowed with. So when we were given the dominion over the fish of the sea, the scripture represents that as our emotions. We have dominion over our emotions. The fowls of the air represents our thoughts. The beasts of the field represents our most dominant characteristics, that which identifies you as opposed to me. Because I'm the only me there is, you the only you there is. And then we were given dominion over those creeping things. And those creeping things are those propensities and tendencies that we have by reason of our association with our environment, by association of our culture, by association of our group, and those with whom we esteem higher than ourselves. We tend to be influenced by things outside of us, as opposed to things that are within us. And so with that being said, with respect to returning to that place, and I don't assume for a moment that you don't know these things, because while I enjoy speaking to people, oftentimes I'm reluctant because I think that I'm talking to people that know everything they need to know at the moment they need to know it. And the only thing that I'm doing is reminding them or bringing back to their remembrance things that they're already convinced of. So thank you very much for allowing me to do that. But notwithstanding that, because we are in the environment in which we are oftentimes influenced, sometimes against our will, and sometimes we think that we truly believe what we embrace because it is very popular. But it takes a very strong and courageous person to stand alone. But we often do that anyway, don't we? We're always exercising our dominion. We're always standing in our space. But the strong, courageous, actualized person are those like Jesus and many others whom you probably admire who can hold their space, notwithstanding the condition. As the scripture says, stand. And after you've done all to stand, stand. Because that space that you're standing in, that is yours, and no one has a right to it except by your permission. So, like myself, the things that I'm unwinding from many things that happened to me in my childhood. So I'm not talking to you about something that I am absolutely free of, but it's a continuous growth that we're talking about. And my wife, Biska, is going to talk with you about that process that God has endowed her with today to bring to you. So I'm just standing before you by way of introduction. Well, as I said before, I like to think of myself as the presence of God, speaking to the presence of God. But I have, what can I say to you? I've survived everything. I really have. I've survived everything. I grew up as a little black boy in the South, running through the woods, seeing black men hanging from trees. Now, I don't want you to be able to imagine what that did to me psychologically. And perhaps you can't imagine, but it threw me into, and not only that, there were many things. I was caught by some Klansmen and tied to a chair to watch their ritual. And then when they were finished, they came and put a gun to my head and says, "Who is the superior man, nigga?" Well, I thought to myself, I must be the superior man. You got me tied up. You know?
Good thinking.
Yeah. So in any case, that was about to get me shot until a man, a Klansman, who lived next door to me, knocked him down and revealed himself. But also, I've been educated in all the philosophies and ologies and isms of the world. I have, like I say, I've lived. I just thank God for being here. Ask me any question and I got the truthful answer for you. But in terms of who I am more than a conqueror with Jesus Christ. I've learned to love, notwithstanding anything. There's nothing anything can happen to me. There is nothing anyone can do to me to change my position in God. There's nothing anyone can do to me to cause me to hate or to dislike them. Because when I see those things coming out of people, you know what I do? I first go within and examine myself to find out what's wrong with me. You know, why is this coming out? Because I see that, I believe that I'm always reflecting, or people are always reflecting back to me what is in me. So if I see something coming that is not like God or that is not comfortable, I want to examine me. What is it with me? And when I'm confronted by people, I say to them oftentimes, we have three choices here, my friend. I said, we can pray, which I prefer to do, or we can walk away as though this never happened. I must declare to you, if we don't do either of those, I'm going to be the only one standing here when it's all finished. You know, so I have to take various positions oftentimes, but the position I prefer to take is to behold the presence of God. Because I had to die to get to this place, because I was full of so much hate, and no one could change me but God. I actually literally died. My body was in a morgue. But here I stand before you. But when I came out of that morgue experience, I was looking into the face of an Irishman, a man whom I might have hated for no reason at all. But you know what he did for me upon my requests? He read the Bible to me, the book of Romans. And by the time he got through reading the book of Romans, I was brand new. Brand new. And I'm still brand new. And there's nothing you can ever do. There's nothing anyone, absolutely nothing anyone can do to stop me from loving them. Because I know that love is the conquering power. But apart from that, any questions you got for me at any time other than today, or perhaps after, I get the answer. But the answer is always that I am the presence of God, relating to you, the presence of God. Because that's all I know. That's all I know. Is the presence of God. Because it was God that saved my life. The doctor who tried to save my life before I went into the other side, he leaned over my body as I'm standing apart from him, watching him. He's crying. Crying because he could not save me as though my life was in his hand. But he wept bitterly. And I went on the other side, and God told me, you got to go back. It's not your time to be here. Your work is not finished. You've got work to do. And then that's when this man read the Bible to me, and my heart was just literally, absolutely, positively, unequivocally changed. And that change is what you see today. And if you come to know me other than today, you'll know it's true. Because there's nothing that can move me out of this position of my relationship with God. And what's moreover, I know you have that same relationship with God. Yeah, I know that. Hello, Bill. So, that's part of my bio. There's so much. But everything that there is about me is also about you. Isn't life happening to us? And as life is happening to us, it gives us a tremendous opportunity. And that opportunity is to not only allow life to happen to us, but to effect the divine life of God through us, as us. We have that ability. We are always exercising dominion, but most of us are doing it unconsciously. Then imagine doing something that you know how to do. Can't you be more effective about it and more expedient in getting it done? But oftentimes we do things as a result of lack of understanding, and we get tied up just like that rope. That's what my wife's going to talk to you about now. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Good morning. When I introduce myself, and it's always like, you know, okay, I just want to say, really, I'm just a messenger. That's what I feel. Historically, academically, I am a nurse, holistic, certified RN, still have my license in my 70s, but I'm not working except in volunteer programs. And I graduated from UNCA in 87 with philosophy, and then I went to Vanderbilt for a divinity school. But, you know, that's not really who I am. Who I am is a living, breathing spirit, and that's my identity. And that's what I want to talk to you about today, the impressions, the knots that we carry in our subconscious mind through learned experience, and therefore my mind becomes filled with what I think I know. There's an old story about a Zen master and a university college professor came up and wanted to learn Zen. And, you know, he's kind of proud of his knowledge that he's acquired. And so the Zen master offered him a cup of tea. So he pours the tea in his cup and doesn't stop pouring until it runs over into the table, his robe, and the professor said, "Wait, it's full." And the Zen master says, "Yes, you want to learn Zen, but your mind is already full. Is there room? Is there room? Is your cup empty enough to learn? to unlearn. This is a tribute to unlearning. What are some of the things that I still carry? The knots in the picture representing where I'm stuck in behaviors, habits, or perceptions that I have picked up through life, because we're all, this is not high enough, we are all recovering from the human condition, are we not? All of us. We're all evolving. So I like that story, and it's a very well-known old story about the Zen master, because to me it depicts that, what am I willing, or do I need to? Do I need to? Yeah, here, this one, honey. This one. I don't want to hold it. Yeah. Thank you so much. There. I guess I'm shorter. So what is the definition of unlearning? Anybody? Anybody want to share what they say again? Yeah, the release or dismissal of what isn't true. Now, that can be a whole class in itself, that, because most of us grew up in a time where the external world and our values clashed. Most of us grew up in a time where we faced trauma, confusion, abuse, some of us. And we have impressions from those experiences. So the knots represent in the impressions that I might carry that prevent me from seeing all possibilities and how I perceive, especially catastrophe and crisis that we are witnessing today. Confusion, destruction. Could it be considered that the confusion, that the trauma we are witnessing could be an instrument for rebirth? So if I'm going to add to the solution in today's problem, everything's divided, we're really a hangover from, it seems like, World War II. Do you remember in the baby boomers in the 60s and 70s, we all witnessed this. We witnessed a resistance to a paradigm that I say doesn't work. And that paradigm is called the materialistic paradigm, or survival. And it's based on competition, not cooperation. It's based on status. It's what you do is what you have. Based on appearance. Is that true? No. It's false. So remember the time in that era that I was young. I got out of high school in the early 70s. So what I'm saying is I witnessed this beautiful push. It seemed like a tremendous creative push in every discourse of life, art, music. And there was funding for even me as a nursing student to fly somewhere and study holistic nursing. Can you imagine? There was love. The lyrics in music. Here's one of them. Bette Midler. From a Distance. I'm not going to sing that whole thing, but remember it goes... From a distance, the world looks blue and green, and the snow-capped mountains white. And it goes on to say, from a distance, you are my brother, not war. From a distance, everything is harmony, and there's peace in every land. And that's the heart of every man, because truth is innate in every human being. Truth is undivided. And that divinity of truth showers the whole planet without distinction. So my question in this particular introduction is, how can I undo the
cognitive biases I have, the socio-political biases I have, the biases from trauma where I don't trust. How can I work on that so I can maybe view how to look at a broken world? And how can I add to the healing of this world without falling into we they, or anger, hatred? The only way I know is to face the biases, self-examine, like you were saying, myself. Dalai Lama said, the only way world peace can occur is if you are at peace. It's not about what you see as much as what you react, how you react. You don't have a choice on what others do or what happens. Sad things happen in the world. We live in duality. But my response, I do have control over. It's my response. So how can I look at my responses instead of saying, and angry at injustice that's happening? Can I look at it differently? Can I use pain and grief as a teacher? As a teacher. I used to do, in, you know, nursing has really taught me so much. And I used to teach an art, a class called Aesthetics in Nursing. And I would have patients that had breast cancer draw their experience. So they didn't keep resisting and resisting. We're always taught to fight disease when in essence that makes it worse. Because everything is energy and you want to embrace your experience as teacher for healing. And it was powerful for those people. It's the same with today. If I resist, remember The Secret, that old movie that talked that everything's energy. You are what you think, and what you think affects everything around you. So resisting what's happening, is that really adding to the solution? Because if everything is energy and there is a divine presence in the seed of everyone, not conscious, of course, but there's a divine presence that's showering humanity love, connection. How can I plug into that? How can I serve from my spirit, the highest aspect of my soul, which to me is love? So how can I undo and unwind my own biases and unlearn? And we all have them. So I can carry energy that helps heal a broken world. And that just, to me, makes sense. That's why Rumi said the highest form of learning is unlearning. If I can unlearn why I'm judging this, why I don't trust this, if I can look at that and maybe heal that part of me that feels that way, I carry a different presence, and I'm able to be present. There's a theologian, Richard Rohr. He's really uses mysticism to help fix broken Christianity, which Christ never wanted anyway, I believe. I'm sorry. Christ was a revolutionist. I believe that too. Even studying the Bible academically, the Bible wasn't written for decades after Christ left, and they found letters of his disciples, you know, notes about what Christ said and everything, but they didn't have a name on it. So they just slapped common names on it. You could never tell that to a lot of people because they're not willing to unlearn what might be true and dismiss what may not be. But the baby boomers, remember when you're young, everything's fresh, everything's creative. And for some reason, when we all lived if we lived in the 60s and 70s, I don't know about you, but I witnessed a rise and a mirror for the youthfulness in me. Oh, they're supporting an education. They had funding in mental health for schizophrenics, outpatient programs. There was a mirror of the inner potential that was focused upon humanity. People traveled to the Peace Corps all over the world to connect, to help. What happened? I perceive that since the late 80s and 90s, there was like a return to survival, a return to a paradigm where you are what you have, you are what you do, because the spring tide of surge that we witnessed in our early years, to me, were the seeds planted. To me, they were the star seeds, you want to call them, indigo. I was indigo. I rejected the way I grew up because I wanted to know more. I saw a larger vision. I was a rebel. I'm so grateful. But we did witness on a collective basis in the United States. Don't you agree with it? Do you remember that? And they paid for you to go learn Zen. Because they believed in innovation and there was that energy post-Holocaust, post-World War II, of which did we ever really recover from that? Did we ever dismiss the knots of impressions from the belief system of separateness? Meher Baba says the cause of all suffering is separateness, a belief in separateness. Did we release those wounds of our parents? Time. But there was, after crisis, there was and tremendous injustice. And the worst behavior that a human being can render, the Holocaust, the slavery, it's incomprehensible to me in some ways. It is. But those were the imprints that we came in with. But we also came in with the seeds of the new. The emphasis was on spirituality, finding yourself. And since I have been a mental health nurse in hospitals my career, it was at that time when I graduated. I mean, you could stay 30 days, God forbid, or 4 to 6 weeks, and you felt better, and they really did work besides just slap a pill in your mouth. We're so into the shortcuts in America because we've adopted survival again. That's what the paradigm appears to be. But those seeds that matches more the spirit are still there. They have not taken root. But it doesn't mean that they're not going to. And it doesn't mean that this crisis that we face can't be seen from a larger perspective than one of anger, hate, and separation. To me, spirituality is a lifelong unlearning and learning, unlearning and learning, and becoming. If I can accept the world in all its dualism, it seems like there's a permanent crease in opposites. Right, wrong, up, down. You know, I mean, that's limiting. Anything I limit, that means that I need to look inside, because the energy of God is not limited at all. It's unlimited in potential and possibilities, and it is eternal. And there's no spaces. Everything is light. To me, God is light. Whatever you want to call God, it's not separate from me. And that's one of the most dangerous knots that was passed down in our upbringing. Or that you are a wretched sinner or you're inherently evil. False. Sorry. No. Not true. Out. So, For me, this life has been, like Carole King said, a tapestry. My life has been a tapestry of rich and golden hue, an everlasting vision of the ever-changing dew, because we're always evolving and always unlearning, shedding, unlearning, shedding, like a snake that molts to the spiritual self, the higher self, which is in every human being, conscious or unconscious. So for me, my life, since I had a lot of trauma as a child, which I'm grateful for today, because it shaped me in who I am today. I mean, I was in the hospital as a teen for depression, in therapy most of my 20s, but it didn't stop me from, you know, there was a strong, healthy part of me that went to school and was open and that kind of thing. But now that we live in a time where the collective is divided, appearing to be, and we live in a time where those old values, to me, we are all hospice workers right now for a dying system, for a dying paradigm. And why? We need to ask ourselves, am I attached to having things the way they used to be? Or can I be open to perceive any possibilities, not knowing how it's going to happen? No, I don't know. But my belief and my faith, knowing that this energy beyond the self and is ultimate good, divine, and it's marked by connection and love, that holds the plan. Not me, but I can trust it. I can trust it. And I can seek the strength I need to endure, because we don't know what's coming. No. But can I use this as a teaching? Can I use it as a way not to fall into division? Because it's always my words, my action, and what I think that creates my world. You are what you think. You are what you focus upon. I want to focus on peace. And the model I look at today are the monks walking. It melts my heart, because to me they are operating a walking prayer from that state of awareness that the love of God is showering it on everyone without distinction, and there's no judgment. To me, that is teacher. That is teacher. And it fills my heart. You don't need permission to walk peace. You don't need, they don't get paid. And most of them are Buddhists. I think there's 23 of them, and that beautiful dog, Anoka, from Texas, I know, with a heart on its head. So this process that I'm briefly touching on is a transformative one that most of us have had some experience individually, but freedom is not individual alone. Everything I think and do affects my fellow beings. You know, in nursing too, I cared for criminals, and it was a beautiful exercise spiritually not to have judgment. I'm not there for that. I'm there to help them in maybe raising their awareness so they can help themselves, but by accepting them. So, knowing that we all have the DNA of God in us, we do, without a doubt. Maybe the seeds that have been awakened decades ago will flourish, and I believe they will at some point, but it's not going to be my timing. It's not going to be your timing. It'll be the divine plan. I want to do my part, and I want to operate from the highest awareness I can render, because my heart is already cracked wide open. I'm not going to go take a class how to do this. It's something you revealed to you through love. You all know that love is real. It's not something that you learned from your intellect. No. Reading can be an aid, but through experience is the teacher. So these monks represent the walk I choose. Walk for peace. Whether it's you're at the grocery store and somebody gets mad ahead of you, I have a chance to be peace. It's energy, everything. How will I lift my energy to inspire not only myself, inspiration, Greek word inspiritus, to breathe in air, holy breath. And everybody on the planet, my comrades, as a family of humanity, they all breathe air like I do, and we're all trying to walk this journey in this beautiful but most difficult world. So I have to feel I have compassion, and I do. As a nurse, I had compassion for perpetrators, of course. But that spiritual awareness through experience taught me, revealed to my heart these things. I feel blessed because I couldn't go back, and if I were to go back in the in mental health and work, I couldn't go backwards and judge them. Right. So to me, prayer, again, like you were saying about prayer, Alexander, prayer comes from energy beyond the physical. But we do too. We are plugged in to that energy. And yes, it can be the way we walk on the planet. But there is a time in every destruction in history where there's crisis and tragedy before that tide spring of fresh air is externalized. But we can't wait till then. We don't need to look outside of ourselves to learn how to surrender to the highest within us, how we cope with the tragedy we face. I'm not going to call the government a divided government. They're not aware. I can have compassion for them, people. But I think the questions I'd like you to ask is, am I attached to the old way that this country was? Attachment can hold us back, too, from seeing all possibilities. Maybe there's something unexpected, new, and better evolving as consciousness evolves. I'm not going to be attached to the past. I don't want to put new ideas into old wineskins, and that doesn't work anyway, as we witnessed today. But I think that the monks as a model are indeed messengers of how we can be if we choose. And I think it's the most beautiful witnessing, because that walk of just 24 or whatever monks, thousands of people feel it. Some break down, but they want to walk with them. They want to serve because they represent the whole. They don't judge. So that's the perspective that, and nobody has to have it. That's what I want to adopt. I want to practice undoing the biases. We all have residue of that, all of us, and become a messenger, an instrument. Because Bette Midler's song, those lyrics were from spirit, just like all the artists that we knew reflected in the time. John Lennon, I've never stopped imagining, never. But just look at the time there were colored cars. Now everybody drives a white or gray car because of this conformity thinking. But you don't have to conform. A sovereign being is very dangerous, but it's also, they're very powerful. These monks are sovereign. They're not going to, somebody makes fun of them, like I listen to their talks, and that does happen. So if somebody makes fun of them, they say, you have a good day, I'm here to bless you. They don't come from the ego saying, you know, what did you say, Hannah? Or something. No. They have one focus, probably as a Buddhist, to postpone their own nirvana so they can help others awaken. So they are a model. And there have been models throughout time. To me, history is circular. Yeah, we might develop high tech, but if it doesn't serve higher values, what good is it? That's my position. And the world, I read a quote, and then I'll tie this up, but the world is releasing what it can no longer carry. To me, that's very powerful, because it says that it's enough of what's in opposition to divinity and truth, division, aggression, violence, not treating the earth with love, all of it. The earth is responding because everything is consciousness. The earth is releasing what it can no longer carry. To me, that's huge. And that is powerful. It can't carry the negativity. It's not meant to. And there's a culminating point now where people and life and humanity is at a crossroads. Can't go back. It'd be like breaking up with or getting divorced in a relationship and then wanting to go back after you've learned what you needed to learn. I mean, it's not. We want to carry the good with us, know what we learn. But we don't need to be attached to something that is not working. This system is not meeting the needs of people, and it's due to ignorance. So in conclusion, I just wanted to ask again, how can I be in a world that is very broken in appearance, at the same time not compromising my own spiritual principles from grief? So rising above and seeking the unseen. It's just like laying out in the grass. When you look up at the stars, you don't sit there and have to qualify everything. It's a vast, unlimited experience. When we wake up in the morning, our mind, you know, then we start defining and qualifying and separating, and so much for the new to come in. But if we can wake up peaceful and present and quiet and at centered peace within ourselves, knowing that the ebb and flow of life happens at this time especially, and can I be into the flow? Doesn't mean you don't march. It doesn't mean you don't speak your voice. No, but it's the intention behind the action. So there's my favorite quote from eons ago. Albert Einstein, who was very spiritual at the end of his life. I'll try to read it here. A human being is part of the whole called by us the universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts, and feeling as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is kind of a prison for us, resisting us to our personal desires and to affection for just a few persons near us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. So I ask you, in situations, it may serve one in any situation, but especially conflict and crisis. What would love do? Thank you.